from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. On the far side of 50, legendary rocker Peter Wolf still believes in the magic, he still believes in the music, and in Sleepless, his sixth solo album, Peter Wolf captures them both with a lot of hard-earned life lessons running through.
Sometimes I don't know what it is I'm looking for. Whatever it is I want, I seem to need a little bit more.
The former Jay Giles Band frontman and older, wiser Wolf takes Sleepless on a roaming tour of the musical map of his life and maybe your life too. He finds magic in bittersweet songs of living and knowing too much.
Everything around here is growing pain.
This is a rocker coming to terms with what life is and isn't anymore. Wolf pays tribute to legends like John Lee Hooker and Otis Rush. He gets a little help from his old friends, Mick Jagger and Keith Richards. And he keeps it honest. Sleepless is about looking back on life and still living, still being willing. Even to love, it's about taking some good advice. As it says, keep it all simple and tell the truth.
All right.
Listeners, can you hear life's bittersweet lessons in Peter Wolf's latest songs? Are you still sleepless, still wasted, still willing? Join the conversation tonight with Peter Wolf at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now in the On Point studio is Peter Wolf. Great to have you. Thanks so much for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
Peter Wolf, I've been listening to you for years. I've seen you perform live and loved it. I have to say, I don't know if I've ever seen a performer with more energy when you would get revved up. You just about knocked the roof off.
Well, yeah, if it's in you, it's got to come out, as they say.
Well, you got a lot in there. Your new album, Sleepless, I have to say I love it. I love the way you have probed and looked so honestly at a lot of things, but the theme that I heard running through it, maybe this is more about me than you, but it's about coming to terms, about age, about what you've still got, what's gone by, what might have been, what still could be, but a real mature grasp of age and the passage of time and how ruthless that can be.
Well, thank you. The first song you just played is a song called Growing Pain.
Yeah.
And I was working on it down in Nashville. Nashville, a lot of people think of as being, you know, home of country music, which it is. Mm-hmm. But it also has been the home of a lot of great musicians, a lot of R&B musicians, Steve Cropper, who used to be in Memphis, and a lot of gospel musicians have come there, and a lot of people who were in L.A. And so I like to go down there. I get to work with a lot of writers and different people. And I went there once to meet with a great songwriter by the name of Harlan Howard. And Harlan Howard wrote a lot of songs for Patsy Cline and Ray Charles and Buck Owens, Tiger by the Tail, I Fall to Pieces. And he's a legendary. Pick Me Up on Your Way Down. He's legendary.
They don't get much better.
No, don't get much better. He sort of was for country what Smokey Robinson was for R&B and Motown.
Those songs that just get in your head and you can never get rid of them.
Right. And then also become American or world classics.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to meet him. I wanted to meet two other songwriters, Hank Cochran and Don Gibson. Hank Cochran's out. He's out hunting.
Yeah.
We don't know when he's going to come back. And Don Gibson was unfortunately in the hospital. I met Harlan and he said, Harlan eats lunch at this one restaurant. I'm going to call him. Called me back and said he'd love to meet with you.
Yeah.
I met this man. He's in this restaurant. He's a legend to me, and I've never met him before.
Sure.
And he's sitting there. He's a big fella, worked in steel mills. And he says, Peter, thank you so much for coming to meet me. I said, no, Harlan, thank you for meeting me. He said, are you one of these musicians that don't do any drinking or anything or just have, like, soda water? I said, well, why do you ask? He said, well, I'm going to have myself my lunch, which is three screwdrivers.
Let's get going.
So I said, all right, Harlan, count me in. And what I didn't realize was the bartender, since he was like 75 at the time, would only put a couple of drops in his first screwdriver, a drop of vodka in the second screwdriver, and nothing in his third screwdriver.
So it was pretty good Florida orange juice.
Right. But mine, they put it double shots.
They let you have it. You've always been good, or maybe it's not being good, maybe it's just natural, in your life at going right backstage and talking with the musicians who attracted you.
Well, that's
Muddy Waters. You did the same thing.
Muddy's true. That's true, but the point I was making is I ended up at Harlan's house, and we were both sort of laid out on the floor. We spent the afternoon talking about songwriting. He said to me, you know, what you working on? I said, I'm working on the song Growing Pain. And he said, well, what's it about? And I started talking to him, and he said, well, let me tell you something about the secret of songwriting. He said, just keep it simple and tell the truth. And that's what I try to do with this recording more so than ever. And it's, you know, the simplicity is easy, but the truth is hard. Because when you get into songwriting, you know, you get into the aspects of rhyming, and it becomes like a crossword puzzle. But to get into the truth of it and beyond the craft, that's where the challenge is.
It is so easy, and so many songwriters get caught up in lots of ornamentation, musical or verbal. And I think you have very neatly avoided that in this album. It's straight on. You've got another cut on here I want to listen to a little bit of, A Lot of Good Ones Gone, which gets into directly into your tribute, which is in this album, to John Lee Hooker, Muddy Waters, Howlin' Wolf. Tell us the story of how you met Muddy Waters. Sorry.
Well, Muddy Waters used to play in this little club right around in Cambridge. It was Club 47, and the club didn't really have a dressing room, and Muddy had just come in from Chicago playing the South Side bars, and he and his band, you know, realized they were wanted something to drink. And I was in the bathroom. I was like 17 years old, and I'm saying, man, this is a coffee house. And he goes, what do you mean a coffee house? They just serve coffee. And
I go, where are the drinks?
Where are the drinks? So I said, I can get you some drinks. So I said, I live right down the block. And they all followed me, and I found Muddy during the break, because there was really no dressing room. During the breaks, Muddy would come to my house with his band and Howlin' Wolf. And there were these great, you know, great artists sitting in my living room, just you know, having themselves a good time.
And thank heavens you reached out. Let's listen to a little bit of this.
Okay.
As these shadows everywhere, but I still do carry on, though there's a lot of good ones gone. Empty space where once I saw faith, memories stand by me now. You know I need you now. Keep on going.
Peter Wolf, from his new CD, Sleepless, they're singing A Lot of Good Ones Gone. A tribute to a lot of great musicians who you're paying tribute throughout this album to.
Right. You know, when John Lee Hooker, particularly, who became a friend and someone that I played with, it was one of the first gigs I ever did. It was one of the great Mississippi bluesmen. He and I became friends. When he passed, I realized, you know, Muddy was gone and Howlin' Wolf was gone, and it was the end of the tradition. But he was one of the last of the great Southside Chicago players. But when we were mixing this song, we were mixing in Lower Manhattan right after 9/11. And there was, you know, in the studio would get filled with the smell that was going on at the World Trade Center. And so the song took on a whole other meaning of a passing of a certain kind of innocence. And getting to know Muddy and John Lee, and fellows who kind of came out of rural America, walking around in the old, you know, South, hitchhiking, taking trains, ending up in the urban north. It was a great saga, and getting to meet these gentlemen and these great artists was just something that once you have that, it never leaves you.
How does it happen that a kid who grew up in the Bronx ends up having such an affinity for that soulful, rural kind of sound that still comes through in the simplicity, especially in this album, Sleepless? Where did that get knitted together, Peter Wolf?
I don't know. I guess it's the romance of it. When I started reading, I started really becoming very attracted to the Southern Gothic writers, you know, Carson McCullers. And when I was young, I think I saw Tennessee Williams' Streetcar Named Desire, and I remember going out and getting all his plays, and they were kind of strange when you're like 11, 12 years old.
Yes, they would be.
Sodomy, what is that?
No. Let's see.
And so it kind of but there was something that attracted me to the South, and unaware really, as the first wave of rock and roll that came out, Muddy Waters, Jerry Lee Lewis was from the South, Elvis Presley was from the South, Fats Domino, Wyoming Harris, all these great R&B and rock and roll artists were, but you know, the first wave, were, most of them were from the South.
You were pulled right out. You dropped out of high school. You headed west. You ended up in the Midwest, and for a while, hanging out at the University of Wisconsin around the campus in Madison. I've spent some very sweet time there. We've got a lot of listeners there. What was that chapter of your life? What were you doing then, Peter Wolf? You were very young.
Well, yeah, I would hitchhike around, and what I would do is I would pretend I was a student, and I would find out where there was where the art building was, and I'd say, this looks like an interesting building, and I would just come in every day and pretend I was a student and use the art supplies and paint and, you know, get some canvas and stretch, and I would find a dormitory couch to sleep on, and I'd live there. And
it's a good way to go.
My sister was a student there, and she finally was called in by one of the administrative saying, you know, I think that there's a gentleman here. They tell me he's your brother that doesn't belong here. That's
what is going on?
So my sister said, I think it's time I moved on. So I ended up doing the same thing at the University of Chicago.
Right, and pretty soon came back to Boston. We're going to go into this break in just a minute, listening to Nothing But the Wheel, where you're performing with an old friend, Mick Jagger. When did you connect with the Rolling Stones?
I first met the Rolling Stones in the late 60s. We were label mates on the Atlantic record label, 60s, 70s. And we kind of met in some studios and went on several tours when I was with the Giles Band. We had toured with the Stones three or four or five times throughout the States and Europe. So a friendship, the after-hours friendship developed.
So you know the Stones like we don't know the Stones. Are they good to hang with?
Rolling Stones are the creme de la creme, and the thing that drives the Rolling Stones is their incredible passion and love for music. Now, they've become, you know, something in recent times, but I had the pleasure of being with them while they were rehearsing for this tour, and it's quite incredible. They're still a rock and roll band, and they're still concerned about the music and about the songs and which songs from which album to include. And they've been incredibly influential to many people. They've really helped bring a great part of R&B and blues to many people that would have never really experienced such great music.
And they, like you, in a way now, in a way, are embracing even their own age. There's a poster up on a young person's wall in my home of Rolling Stones, and it reminds me of these old posters of the Southern bluesmen when they got all really gnarly and shadowed and... they're saying, well, okay, we're not young anymore. What about it?
Well, I think it's, you know, I mean, I used to go see, you know, Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers or Louis Armstrong. And, you know, to me, it was going to see just a great artist. And how old, I mean, people really don't say, well, Matisse, you know,
exactly.
You know, Matisse is getting older. But, I mean, as long as he's still making, you know, really great paintings, it you sort of keep on going.
And yet rock and roll was youth.
Yes, it was, but the youth has gotten older, and they're still rocking.
I really admire the way you've come over that divide and brought that wisdom with you and the way you're sharing it with us in this album. We're talking this hour with wonderful singer Peter Wolf about his new CD. It's entitled Sleepless. Do you hear the hard-earned insights of your life in the voice of a 50-something Peter Wolf? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. Here from that album with Mick Jagger is... Nothing But the Wheel. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In the studio tonight, Peter Wolf. Peter Wolf from his new CD, Sleepless, singing Never Like This Before. Peter Wolf is with us in the On Point studio tonight, and it's great to have you, Peter Wolf. Right here, I mean, I'm dating myself, but why not? I mean, you're putting me in the sweet spot of the music that I love, and I don't know if it's, I guess it's where rock and roll meets something right up from that South you were talking about. William Bell performed this song, and you picked it up off the radio, if I got that right?
Well, what happened was I would travel with the band. We'd be on the road, and one of the things I would do is go into these old mom-and-pop record stores that unfortunately don't really exist too much these days and just say, hey, you got any records down in the basement or anything? And one day I just came across the Stax label, which was from Memphis, and the same label that Otis Redding and a lot of great artists recorded on. And I saw this William Bell song, never heard it, put it on, and said, man, this is cooking. And there's always been a song I loved, and I got together with Kenny White, who actually produced this record with me, and we said he heard it and said, "This is great. Let's try it."
So let's listen to a little more. There it is, and we're glad you're doing it, Peter.
Now, that guitar playing is a gentleman by the name of Cornell Dupree, and Cornell Dupree used to play with King Curtis, Sam Cooke, many of the great Aretha Franklin records, and he's also played with Brooke Benton, Rainy Night in Georgia, one of the great R&B jazz players. He's a unique player that players like him do not exist anymore, unfortunately, but he's a treasure that's still with us.
But you've got him there, and it means that there's a reason that this breathes with an awful lot of music history.
Well, I try to bring in players that are not just players, but are artists. And Cornell Dupree is certainly one of them.
You know, when I look through your bio, Peter Wolf, it's just sprinkled with all these kind of eye-popping things. That your father was a musician and a kind of a vaudeville actor, I guess, as well. You spent some time around Tanglewood in your youth and in Western Massachusetts, and actually got plopped down some afternoons in the studios of Norman Rockwell.
Yeah.
What?
Well, when I was about three, I was dyslexic, and I took to drawing, and I would draw. You know, I was the kind of kid that if there was a book, telephone book, I just drew on everything. So they would constantly be giving me paper, and my dad was working at Tanglewood as a singer. He was with the Robert Shore Chorale, and he would take me into Sturbridge, I believe it was, where Norman Rockwell had a studio. I didn't know who it was. He would take me up these stairs and introduce me to this gentleman, said, you know, this is my son, he loves to paint. And Mr. Rockwell would say, well, here, sit down in the stool, young man. And I guess he had a son named Peter, too, that was about my age. And so he'd give me some sheets of paper and ask me what I'd like to draw. And I would just watch him. And I remember many years later going back, and it wasn't any longer a studio, but I remembered the exact place that was, you know, where the staircase where I would go up, and I had no idea.
So there at one end of the rainbow, we've got Norman Rockwell. At the other end of the rainbow, talk about the intersecting of paths through Peter Wolf's life. After Madison, after Chicago, you're back in Boston in the fine arts school, and your roommate is David Lynch. I mean, the Mr. Un-Norman Rockwell.
Oh. Well, this was before David started making films, and I was in Boston. I didn't have a place to stay. I was actually sleeping on underneath the Lars Anderson Bridge.
Oh, that could get cold.
Yeah, it could get very cold in September. So I was looking for a roommate, and some gentleman came up behind me in the school. As you know, you have these sheets of paper on the wall. He said, you looking for a roommate? And I said, yeah, I'm looking for a place to live. And he said, well, I have a place. My name's David Lynch. I go, hey, I'm Pete, and we lived in a one-room apartment. And we lived together for about a year, but then David thought I was a little too weird.
Too weird for the filmmaker who made Blue Velvet.
Yeah.
Okay, that says something about Peter Wolf. Tell us about the David Lynch was thinking about filmmaking. He stuck with that. You, I think, for a while, they were thinking about visual arts as the way you would express yourself. You ended up in music. Have I got that right?
Well, we both really were just very dedicated painters. Mm-hmm. David wasn't really interested in film. I remember the only conversation he said to me about film is he said, you know, one day he'd like to do sort of the trailers for films and or do the lettering or something. Yeah. I mean, there was not talking. I love music. One of the things that used to drive him crazy is I would have like these Thelonious Monk records and I would play them over and over. And I was like, you know, he was very formal and wore like a suit and tie a lot of times. And I was just, you know, kind of slob and, you know, smoking three packs of Gauloises and, you know, I was going to die at, you know, 22.
Let me go now and why not?
Yeah, why not, man? And we would argue about painting and this and, you know, it was very passionate.
But how did it happen? And I'm always curious about this in an artist's life because, of course, it's not written in the stars how that passion, that art will be expressed. How did it happen in your case that it ended up being through song?
Well, I was with a group of painters, and we went to a party in a loft. And there was a group of other painters that had a band. They were going to the same school, Boston Museum School of Fine Arts. Mm-hmm. And they were playing, and to get into the party, you had to bring a jug of wine. So we bought a $2 jug of wine, and we came in, and they were playing, and I loved music. I had a harmonica on me, and one of the gentlemen forgot the words to a song. And I said, I know that song. I just bought it. There's a man down there. It might be your man. I don't know, by G.L. Crockett. I know the words to that. He said, well, come on, try singing it. And that moment, I stood in front of the microphone. I'd never sang before. And I started, well, here I am, baby. And I just started singing. And then it was this, like, I guess the closest thing I'll ever come to when people talk about this, you know, transcending moment or born-again moment.
There it was.
And it was just incredibly powerful. And I remember, you know, wow, and saying to these guys, well, are you guys getting together tomorrow? I said, well, and I would be there every day. And
right.
As a matter of fact, a fellow that was in the band, we formed a band called the Hallucinations, who I was just with, a fellow Doug Slade. I mean, we were all very passionate painters, but the music thing just started getting stronger. And it was a very exciting time in music. There were bands, young bands, Rolling Stones, Van Morrison, Motown was happening, the Beatles were happening, R&B was, you know, James Brown was cooking, you know,
everything was cooking.
Jazz was going on, John Coltrane was inventing some new stuff, Art Blakey, the jazz messages, Miles Davis, I mean.
And Peter Wolf came soaring right into the middle of that. We want to hear some more of this music. There's a great track here with a real country sound to it. You've got Steve Earle coming along here. Some Things You Don't Want to Know. It says, there's some things about us we should never tell. The heart we have in us is as deep as a well. Let's listen. Peter Wolf.
Let's go home, baby. It's time to turn in. When we lie down together, are you thinking of him? There's some things about love that never let go. There's some things you don't want to know. In the cold, lonely morning, in the heat of the night, some things about love that never let go. There's some things you don't want to know.
Peter Wolf with Steve Earle there, off a track off his new CD. CD is Sleepless. The track is Some Things You Don't Want to Know, and it's a CD that deals beautifully with the music, but also with life and living, with knowing, sometimes knowing more than you want to know. And with aging, too. What do you think? When you listen to Peter Wolf, do you hear it? He's been around the track. Do his compromises and the accommodations that he's singing about here echo in your life? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. Buddy's calling from Cape Cod, Massachusetts. Hi, Buddy. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks very much. Yeah. Well, it's an honor to talk with Peter Wolf. I'd like to thank Peter Wolf for... way back, the first essential radio I ever heard was the Woof Goof of Mama Tupa Papa Lufa, All the Ships Out at Sea.
You still got it down.
And I could never forget it.
And this was Peter Wolf as DJ.
Peter Wolf as music, as the radio, as the first radio that, you know, was the radio. Besides the old AM radio, it was the real thing.
So paint the picture, buddy. Where were you when you had...
I was in Boston. I couldn't go away to a different school because I had to stay around within the airwaves.
Oh, thank
Goofa,
you.
Goofa, Mama Doofa, Papa Loofa, all the chips. But there's one song you played, and for these many years, this must have been 69 since then, it was called Sunday Drive, an orphanage full of 39 kids or 49 kids. Who did that song?
Orphanage Drive.
Sunday Drive.
Sunday Drive.
With an orphanage full of 49 kids, you got to go for a... It was almost like a Doug Somm song. And you used to play it on your show.
You're stumping now, the DJ.
That's interesting. Orphanage Drive.
Sunday Drive. Orphanage full of 49 kids, you got to go for a Sunday Drive. And it sounded like a Doug Somm, Sir Douglas song. Well,
I played a lot of Sir Douglas.
I'll have to wait another 35
no,
years.
No.
It could have been.
I'm gonna make a note of that. And let me see, because you might be thinking of like a certain part of the song that's not sort of the catalyst for me. But it was a radio show that I did from midnight to 7 in the morning, 7 days a week. It was the Woofa Goofa Mama Doofa Show, welcoming the little ladies at night, keep from Alabama, keeping all hit, all the ships at sea, doing it, getting right through it. Give us a call and don't just stall. And it was upstairs in a little studio. And what was really great about it is most of Boston closed down at 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock. TV went off.
Goofa Mama Tufa did
not. Not me. And then what was great is some of the great musicians would stop by. So I got to meet Roland Kirk, and I got to meet Muddy Waters would stop by. Van Morrison would stop by. Some of the rockers when they would come in, Traffic or Jimmy Page and different people, Jeff Beck. And so I got to hang out with a lot of people. And plus the phone calls late at night, there's a lot of strange things going on.
Well, when it's Woofa Goofa Mama Tufa, you've got the welcome mat is out.
Sunday Drive.
Buddy, call us later. We'll see if we can pull that out of Peter Wolf's brain bank here. And thanks for your call, buddy. It's good to have you. I want to listen to something that goes off in that Chicago blues direction. You talked a lot about Otis Rush, and you can hear him breathing through this album. You've got a track on here called Homework. Tell us about it.
Well, Homework was a record that Otis Rush did. It was pretty obscure. It was done on the old Duke label and from Texas area. And Otis Rush is a Chicago bluesman. Has great, great voice, great guitar player. And I recorded it way back with the Giles Band. And when we recorded these songs, we did it as, homages to, paying, homage to these artists. And we try to put our own little slant to it. And it was a way of us letting people know where our, music sensibilities were coming from. And so this is a reversion of it. And it was done by accident. This was the interesting story about this. They were just in the studio doing a sound check with the instruments, and the engineer said, "Pete, I really don't want you to sing, so don't want to pick up, but if you can just get real close to the mic so everyone can follow you, we just want to do a check." So this was a sound check that wasn't really supposed to be recorded.
When Peter Wolf does a sound check, we want to listen. Here's Homework.
Oh, baby, I might be a fool, wasting my time about going to school. The way you love me so, I can't do my homework anymore. I can't do my homework anymore. Oh, baby, you got me so blind. You got me walking around in circles about to lose my mind. The way you love me so, I can't do my homework anymore.
Peter Wolf off his new CD, Sleepless, with Homework, originally recorded by the legendary Chicago blues man, Otis Rush. There's a sound check that we're willing
to listen
to.
Well, it wasn't a sound check. I was just keeping real close to the mic, and then when the musicians were listening to the instrument, Kenny, the producer, said, "Let's hear what Pete's doing." And they put it up, and I said, "Wait a second." I said, "No, I'm just kidding around here." They said, "No, but it sounds great." I said, no, we can't use this.
Well, it does. It's got the kind of raw, fresh off the jam feel to it.
Well, that became the argument. And then Kenny finally said, "Look, Pete, you love rock and roll. You love spontaneity. This is it. You can go in there and try it 30 times. You'll never get it this loose." And I went in and tried it again, and it just there was just that decisive moment that happens that makes recording magical when you get it.
And it really stands up now when everything seems so produced and so larded full of engineering. And this just like much of this album feels like the genuine article.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Let's see. The Peter Wolf bio, Faye Dunaway. When did you meet her? When did you marry her?
Well, we met at a show. We were the Giles Band show out at the Fillmore East when Bill Graham was a great rock and roll promoter. And I was in San Francisco, and a lady friend of mine, I said, you know, they say San Francisco's for lovers. You know, I don't know anybody in this town. And she said, well, I'll bring a friend. And she introduced me to her friend named Dorothy. I said, hey, how you doing? She said, fine. She's somewhat attractive lady. I said, what do you do? She said, I'm an actress. I said, really? What kind of theater stuff do you do? So, well, I do theater and stuff. And I had no idea it was Faye Dunaway. Mm. And we ended up going out, and a friendship came about. And about a year later, we got married.
And stayed married for several years after that.
Yes, we did. And it was a time where, you know, I was jumping off to, like, you know, Schenectady, New York one night, and then, you know, down in, you know, Louisiana the next night, and she was, you know, doing theater and jumping off to Madrid and doing a movie, and it was just during the Chinatown period.
Yeah.
And it was
big as could be.
Yeah, and it was hard because we were trying to live a very normal life together, and, you know, we avoided all that kind of celebrity stuff. There were people like People Magazine wanted to do this or that, or Barbara Walters wanted to come into the house, and, you know.
And yet I'm sure neither of your lives were anything like normal as most of us know it.
It was normal for us.
Normal for Peter Wolf. Well, I don't know what you haven't touched here, Peter. You know, you've got a song about a young woman on the CD called Hey Jordan. This is not about a famous actress, but about a young waitress.
Yeah. This was a song inspired by a fellow I wrote the song with, Will Jennings, great songwriter, and just one of the great human beings that working with Will is something that makes, for me, making records a joy.
You've got a waitress here who you portray as having this enormous thirst for life. You say sometimes the candle can burn too quick and too fast, and that's not good, especially if you're afraid of the dark.
Well, life does have an edge to it, and especially if you're young and vulnerable. You can find yourself walking down that wrong street that might be only one way and no way out.
Here's Peter Wolf singing Hey Jordan off his new CD, Sleepless.
Jordan, don't come down alone. The same old somewhere in between. Hey, Jordan, that's a boy's name on a girl. Are you still undecided? It's such a crazy world. Hey, Jordan, life's a river and it bends. The search for love abiding just never seems to end. You can play through all these changes from midnight until dawn. Still come down alone, hey, Jordan.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Don't come down alone, hey, Jordan. Don't come down alone, hey, Jordan. Don't come down alone, hey, Jordan. Don't come down alone.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're in the studio tonight with Peter Wolf.
All right, this is a story about being double parked on the highway of love. Let me hear you, Sean. Wow.
Let me hear you, Sean.
Yeah. Take me back, year 1994. I had two fine chicks living door to door, and I was too close together. Too close together. That was too close together. That was the best that I could do. Well, I was up early one morning, make my midnight creep. By the time I knocked on one girl's door, the other was looking at me. Too close together. Man, too close together. Yeah, too close together. That's the best that I could do.
Peter Wolf from his new CD, Sleepless, there with Too Close Together. Don't miss Keith Richards on the guitar behind that rockin' voice of Peter Wolf.
Oh, yeah, one of a kind. Oh, boy. Keith is something else. You know, I wrote these liner notes, and, you know, it said the phone rang in the studio Keith should arrive sometime after 5 o'clock was the message. At 4 o'clock, in rolled several beat-up amps and two old guitar cases. At 5 o'clock, someone arrived to set up Keith's equipment. At 5 o'clock, there was another delivery of vodka, ice, and several cases of orange soda. 7 o'clock, someone came around to check on the amps and make sure the ice was still cold. And around 8 o'clock came the man himself, hat, scarf, cigarette in one hand, and a large duffel bag in the other. Keith doesn't just come into a room, he captures it. And it's true. He's one of the most generous musicians I know. I just enjoy watching him as much as I enjoy listening to him. And I've learned so much from him, and I was so honored that he came in and took the time. And we did this in the style of a lot of the records that we both love, the Muddy Waters records and Sonny Boy Williams records. We did it live with lots and lots of vodka.
It is thumping. Peter Wolf, you bring us the report on, you lived that kind of eye of the hurricane rock and roll life, and like everybody else of that generation, these enormous names, Keith Richards, Mick Jagger, and all the rest, so many that you've interacted with, sang with, performed with, you lived through it. You've got to the other side of some kind of continental divide there, outside of that crazy, wonderful youth culture, into something that this album is just full of, which is much more at ease and willing to talk about age, to talk about loss, to talk about regret. Has that been an especially difficult transition for this generation, for your generation, and the kind of big musical performers of that generation? Or is it everybody's got the same journey?
I think everybody does have the same journey. But I think, as you said earlier, there's this sort of stigmata about rock and roll that there's a youth aspect to it. And I think what's great about rock and roll is that every, you know, age group finds its own. It's like water seeks its own level. Mm-hmm. There's new groups coming up that, you know, are speaking to younger people. A lot of people get confused with what's going on in rap. Well, there's certain aspects of rap that speak to the things that are going on in life for these young kids that are 14, 15, some of them, you know, urban, some of them, you know, suburban. Mm-hmm. But it is a life thing, and rock and roll is an art form that matures, just like, you know, someone, as I said earlier, Matisse and Picasso, mm-hmm. they were living in Paris, they were young men, and, you know, who knew 50, 60 years later they'd still be painting.
But with this album, I feel you doing it so deliberately, so artfully. I have to say, for me, it's a kind of a guidepost. It's kind of a way to say, hey, come on, you can come on over here, you can come up here. These years, yeah, they're rolling by, but let's look at them and see what we can learn. Let's talk about the loss, talk about the regret, make art out of it.
Well, thank you. I mean, that's what I think Harlan was trying to tell me. Was we were both sprawled mm-hmm. out on this floor, was, you know, just tell the truth, and that's what's going to last. And it's easier said than done, at least for me it is. This, you know, getting to this point has been a long journey. And what I find exciting about it is I feel, you know, another sense that there's another journey beginning, because I think I'm just sort of, I guess a slow learner. I'm just starting to get it.
I once met the oldest man in the world. He was 118, and I asked him how he grew to such a great age, how he lived so long. He said, well, I just did everything late.
Or maybe stayed up all night like me. There you go.
Early and late with Peter Wolf. It's been tremendous having you in here tonight. This album is part of a trilogy. Is that right? Have I got that right?
Yes. There was one before that called Fool's Parade. I'm not sure if that's available anymore. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say trilogy is because I'm just hoping there's another one.
Still willing is the word.
Still willing. Still willing, still able. Have me there at your table.
Oh, it's fantastic. We're going to go out with the title track. It is Sleepless. We can hear the hand of Roy Orbison guiding this song about tragedy, hard life, and eternal hope in a heart that won't give up. I guess that's Peter Wolf.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Peter Wolf, has been great having you tonight. Thanks so much for coming in, and keep making that music. We love the side of the mountain you're on. It sounds terrific.
Thank you.
Peter Wolf's new album is called Sleepless. It's available in stores now. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
At your table, I stay awake from dusk till dawn. Think of all that's come and gone. To hell with all those memories and all those stories. If you wanna see my song,
you give me one more chance. I'm hungry as I used to be, and that's why I'm standing here. I'm still sleeping, I'm still wasting, I'm so tired of all I've tasted.
In a moment, I'll be joined by On Point News analyst Jack Beatty. First, let's listen back to the sounds of this past week.
It may be policemen, law enforcement officers, or it may be waitresses or delivery men or nurses or our young men and women in the armed services. I'm going to fight for all of these people in the United States Senate.
A narrow ideology did not win this race yesterday, but a commitment to pragmatically address the needs of Minnesotans right now. And I will go more than halfway to make sure that no one feels disenfranchised by the results yesterday.
Ours is a cause that has not been lessened by defeat or diminished by the heartache we feel this night. As always, others will come to lift the fallen torch. The fire will not go out. No.
They are giving us an opportunity to show that we can produce the results for the people on issues we didn't get done last year, and on issues that we need to do next year.
I have enjoyed every minute of doing this. It's a high honor to be the Democratic leader in the House. It's time to shake things up. It's time to look anew, act anew, think anew.
The draft resolution has been adopted unanimously as Resolution 1441 of 2002.
The world has now come together to say that the outlaw regime in Iraq will not be permitted to build or possess chemical, biological, or nuclear weapons. That is the judgment of the United States Congress. That is the judgment of the United Nations Security Council. Now the world must insist that that judgment be enforced.
I will not damage Israel's relations with the United States, he said, or the special relationship that we have developed with the White House. The conditions that were posed were unacceptable, and that forced me to ask for early elections.
We believe that the first prosecutions should occur in those jurisdictions that provide the best law, the best facts, and the best range of available penalties.
A U.S. official has since confirmed to me that it in fact was attacked by an unmanned aircraft, a Predator, which carries a Hellfire missile. And this was a CIA operation targeting that car in which Abu Ali was riding.
We, the jury, find the defendant, Winona Ryder, guilty of the crime of vandalism, over $400 in damage, in violation of Penal Code Section 594A, a felony as charged in Count 3 of the information.
A big week, a lot going on. There we heard Elizabeth Dole and Norm Coleman, now senators, celebrating a banner election day for Republicans. On the other side, many Democrats, like Missouri Senator Gene Carnahan, could only gracefully accept defeat. We heard Senate Majority Leader Trent Lott saying a lot will get done by Republicans now that they control both houses of Congress. You heard House Minority Leader Richard Gephardt announcing he will step down as the top Democrat in the House of Representatives. UN Security Council passes the U.S.-backed resolution on weapons inspections in Iraq. War may follow. Watch this space. Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon calls for new elections. Attorney General John Ashcroft announcing the alleged D.C. snipers will be tried in Virginia, where a death penalty sentence is the most likely. And there, a U.S. Hellfire missile launched from an unmanned aircraft kills six suspected al-Qaeda terrorists, including a top bin Laden aide in Yemen. And finally, Winona Ryder found guilty of shoplifting. Well, America always pays attention to its celebrities. But Jack Beatty, there is a big week of politics and prelude, very likely, to war.
Yes, and you know, when you look back on the numbers, a shock on Wednesday morning, but in retrospect, a narrow loss. Consider this. 34 seats out of 435 in the House were decided by less than 10 points. 17 went for the Democrats, 17 went for the Republicans. In the 10 toss-up races, the very closest races, it was 5-5. The Republicans picked up 3 in the House. The Democrats picked up a couple of governorships. It's now 25-25 in the governorships, and it's almost dead even in the state legislatures. And in the Senate, a shift of 22,000 votes over a couple of states, and the Democrats could have held on.
And yet in this country, it's a majority rule.
It sure is. It sure is. But it's hard to get a mandate out of such narrow gain. Still, the president should get credit for helping some of his in some of these tight races.
And yet, Jack, in the 2 years ahead, an awful lot of policy decisions, an awful lot of legislation is sure to flow, and that majority will be the deciding factor.
It will be. The key question now is how many of these votes, for example, making the tax cut permanent and other things, will require the 60-vote threshold. This is a matter of Senate procedure, and it remains to be seen. And, if it can be at 60 votes, the Democrats have a stronger hand than they appear to now.
The Democrats have a lot to think about coming out of this week. Narrow as the losses may have been, they were losses, and there's going to be surely an awful lot of talk inside the powwow tent of the Democrats.
Yes, they underdrew their base all over the country. I mean, that's the story of the election. After the 94 election, there was a bumper sticker that read, "Newt happens when 38% of the people vote." Well, Trent happens when 39% of the people vote. And why that is a big problem for the Democrats. They have lost 18 points in registration since the 1960s. That's an extraordinary loss. And they only gained the presidency in 1992 because the Republicans essentially split the ticket split the vote with Perot, drawing away a lot of Republican votes. So the party's in a lot of long-term trouble, even if this wasn't a short-term wipeout.
And now they face a president once widely mocked who has gone in his own way and aided by some terrible history from a kind of strength to strength.
Yes, he has. And in the international arena as well, a unanimous vote out of the Security Council today, even Syria. And the resolution, there's a short clock on it, 7 days for the Iraqis to agree to have the inspectors come, 30 days for them to declare their whole repertoire of weapons, 75 days for the inspectors to look and report. That's a clock that runs to March 1st.
So what's your read, Jack Beatty? Are these Security Council voters more overawed by the potential for a nuclear weapon in Iraq or by the power of the United States?
That's a tough question. You know, when you look back and you see how in the past we have penalized people who voted against us, but clearly they're worried about Saddam Hussein. And with Syria voting, that just underlies how much they are worried.
Remarkable to think. Who knows what will happen? But on this day, we heard people in New York at the UN saying maybe Iraq will actually comply.
We can only hope so.
We can hope so. Jack Beatty, have a wonderful weekend. Thanks for joining us tonight.
And you too. Thank you.
On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Eileen Amata, Kelly Jones, John Roberts, James Ross, Keith Shields, Karen Schiffman, and Tim Skog, with help from Michael Garth and Darren Manoogian. Our senior producer is Graham Griffith. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Have a great weekend. This is On Point.
Cassettes and CDs of On Point are available for $15. Go to onpointradio.org or call 1-800-909-9287.
This is WBUR. We're funded by